Good afternoon, everyone. Sorry about that. I don't know what they were doing. Well, I think they were painting the lines, for one thing. And about 45, 50 minutes later, you finally get out of the traffic. And I didn't break the law too much getting here. Just a little bit, I'm afraid. It's funny, I was following the traffic and I saw a policeman sitting up there on the hill. Everybody had their brake lights on real fast. I don't have any real announcements I need to make. Might just let you know we're all real happy up in our area that they caught that guy the other night. After 7 weeks of running in our neighborhood, of making us all have to stay indoors or a number of other things sometimes. So anyway, we're all rejoicing and we are all feeling a lot more secure right at the present time. So that's good. The only other announcement, I don't know whether you mentioned about the upcoming ministerial conference and all those things that will be coming up in the middle of November. I think a number of here are going. I think you're going, right, Alan? Christine? You're not going to go? For that workshop? Okay, the girls are. All right.
I didn't get an invite yet.
You didn't? Anyway, some of them are going up for the workshop on Sunday the 16th, and then my wife and I will be up there for the ministerial conference on the 16th, the night of the 16th and 17th and 18th. And so keep your prayers going for the conference that will be coming up. I'm not sure what they're going to cover because they haven't sent us an agenda yet. So I don't know what it's all going to be about, but I'm sure it'll be very apropos for what we need in this day and age. All right, I think with that, we'll go right on into the sermon so we can get through. We will be having a Bible study, right? Hope we all studied the same chapters this week. Okay. Title of the sermon today will be Prepare Now for a Good Harvest. Now is the time. We've just returned from the feast, from a happy, joyful, hopefully productive harvest festival at the Feast of Tabernacles, wherever you may have been. And it is a harvest festival, as we're told in Deuteronomy 16, verses 13 to 15. You shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days, and after that you shall have gathered in your corn and your wine. So the harvesting had finished at that time, and then they were to observe this Feast of Tabernacles as a harvest festival. And you shall rejoice in this feast, you and your son and your daughter and your manservant, your maidservant, and the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, the widow that are within your gates. And then he says, 7 days you shall keep a solemn feast of the Lord in the place which he shall choose. So we're all at the Feast of Tabernacles wherever you may have been, even at home, if that's where you were, to enjoy reaping the product of the previous year. So at the Feast of Tabernacles, we enjoyed it to the degree that we took in a good harvest. And so God tells us that we are to receive the rewards for our work. So how many rewards we receive at the harvest festival during the fall holy days will depend upon how much we put into the preparation for that harvest now, immediately, without any time to waste. So we have now arrived at the time of the preparation of the soil and the planting of the crops for next year's productivity. In fact, probably while we were at the Feast of Tabernacles, maybe there or just a couple weeks or so after it, God began the process of helping us prepare for the next year's festival by beginning to pour out the early rain upon the soil. It was sometime in mid to late September, perhaps October, in Palestine that the early rains began to come down. And those early rains were vitally important for the preparation of the soil for the planting of a crop for next year. Almost everything about God's plan revolves around the calendar and about cycles of summer, winter, and the seasons. And we don't have any time to waste. So really what I want to cover today is what are some of the laws that guarantee a good harvest. There are laws of harvest. And if you don't follow those laws now, you're not going to reap the benefits later. Every good farmer knows that. That if you don't do certain things, you're not going to reap the harvest. So how much we will reap the increase will depend on how obedient we are to the laws of harvest. It's interesting, back in the book of Genesis, chapter 8, talking about calendar and about the cycle of life going on, he says in chapter 8 of the book of Genesis, verse 22, he says, "And while the earth remains, seed time and harvest and cold and heat and summer and winter and day and night shall not cease." So God says that the cycles will go on. And as long as those cycles go on, he is present and he is active in our lives. It's interesting that even though there are mentions in the Bible of the four seasons that we know of, spring, summer, autumn, and winter, that in actual fact, God only mentions two seasons in the Bible, summer and winter. The hot and the cold periods of time. He does not go into the other periods of time to any great degree. So how busy have you been? Well, we've been home now, 3 weeks from the feast? How busy have you been using that early rain that God showers down upon us to begin preparation for this coming year? What that rain did in ancient Israel, it softens up the clods. And during a hot summer, dry period of time in Palestine, the soil could get compacted and it would get very hard and it would be very difficult to break it up and to prepare for the seeding of the following year. So God then pours out his early rain upon that dry, packed soil to begin the softening process. We all know that God's Spirit is likened to water. So during that Feast of Tabernacles, or just after, God began to pour out his Spirit in preparation for the next year. What I want us all to do is build on what God started during the Feast of Tabernacles, or just after, called the early rain, in using that. And I think all of us found that God was pouring out his Spirit to a great degree. That water of his Spirit was very evident in the feast around the world. But if we don't use it immediately, it only lasts a very short time. The early rains might only last 2 to 3, maybe 4 weeks. and then it stops. So if you don't use that period of time that God intended while the soil is becoming softer, and we don't do our work at that time in preparing for next year, and we wait until the soil begins to dry out again, then your productivity is going to be vastly reduced and minimized. And so we're going to go through a few of the laws of harvest, but before we get to there, I want to go back again and remind ourselves that God likens our spiritual life to the land of Israel. Our spiritual life is like God's land that he said was a very special land in back in Deuteronomy 11. And he makes this pretty clear in verse 8. Therefore shall you keep all of the commandments that I command you this day, that you may be strong and go in and possess the land whither you go to possess it, and that you may prolong your days in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers to give unto you and to their seed, a land that flows with milk and honey. For the land where you go in to possess, and every time he uses that reference to the land of Canaan, spiritually speaking, he is speaking of our lives from the time of baptism on, that we are in a special land, in a special condition. And God says that that land that you go in to possess is not like the land of Egypt where you came out. In other words, it's not like the world. We made our way through before God called us, some way or the other, we muddled our way through life, didn't we? And we, some way or the other, we made some sense out of it, reaped many of the problems that come along. But from the time that we accepted the commitment from God, that changes. Your life now is no longer at all in your control. Your spiritual life is no longer capable of you making your way through it. And so God says that this land, this spiritual life of ours, is not like the land prior to baptism, from where you came out, where you could sow your seed and water it with your foot, as in a garden of herbs. But the land where you possess is a land of hills and valleys, and it drinks the water of the rain of heaven. We must make use of the periods of time when God waters the territory. He waters our lives. And you will find one of the big times of watering is right during or after the Feast of Tabernacles. The other one we'll get to in a little while is later on, when the crops need that to come to full fruitfulness. And it says then, it is a land in which the Lord your God cares for, and his eyes are upon it always, from the beginning of the year even unto the end of the year. Well, our year begins at the end of the Feast of Tabernacles, and it will end at the Feast of Tabernacles this next year. And so God says that his eyes are upon that land, upon our lives, from the period of time just after the feast until the following feast. And he will bring us productivity. Verse 13, he says, "And it shall come to pass, if you shall hearken diligently to my commandments, which I command you this day, to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all of your heart and with all of your soul, that I will give you the rain of your land in its due season." That is dependent upon us doing certain things, right? How much rain he gives and how much it is in its due season is dependent upon our diligently hearkening to the laws of God in our lives. And he says that I will give you the rain of your land in its due season, the first rain and the latter rain, that you may gather in your corn and your wine and your oil. So God says what we are going to do at the end of this year is to a large degree dependent upon what we do now in our lives. And so what are the laws of the harvest? As we begin this new season, how can we ensure a successful harvest this coming year? Well, there are three primary big points I want to bring out today. Number one, it is a time of plowing. A plowing. You have to go home from the feast and begin preparations. The Bible uses the term plowing in that preparation. This is a time for soil preparation. This is a time to make use of that first rain that God pours out. That first rain that begins to soften the clods and the clumps that have occurred during the summer months when there's been heavy traffic and things like that upon it. The soil has become dry and hard in the summer, so now God provides the opportunity for that soil to soften and to dissolve and to make it even so that we can sow our seed. So the first rains in Israel came in September or October of each year. They were very, very important for the start of the plowing time. Back in the book of Luke, in Luke chapter 9, God tells us in Luke 9, a little bit about plowing. He says in Luke number 9 and verse 62, and Jesus said unto him, that is this person who had come to him wanting to know what he had to do, and Jesus said, no man having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. So each year we put our hand to the plow spiritually, and God tells us through Christ that if you once put your hand to the plow, you cannot look back. You have to finish the job. We have to do what is important for us to do, that we will have the land prepared. It's interesting that in this plowing process, when Christ says here, no man having put his hand to the plow, that literally the plow they used in ancient Israel was just a single plow with a kind of a point that went down into the ground. But the farmer only used one hand to hold that plow. Not both hands. He used one hand on the plow. In the other hand, he had a goad in his right hand in order to prod the oxen or whatever the animals were that he was plowing with. So as he was holding the plow down with his left hand, he was had his goad in his right hand in order to do it. So being a kind of a rugged, rocky territory, and this farmer only had one hand on the plow with a lot of weight on it in order for it to dig down, and even at that, the average plow only went 4 or possibly 5 inches deep. And that was all the deeper they could plow the soil with all of their weight on that plow with their one hand. So if you were putting all of your weight on that plow with your one hand, you better not be looking around, looking backwards, looking anywhere else, because sure shooting, as soon as you looked around, that plow shear would probably hit a big rock, and whoom, you know, you would lose total control. And so God says through Christ that when we put our hand to the plow, let's realize that we got to keep our eyes on what the job is. No looking around. No looking back on trying to maybe appreciate what has been done in the past. We look forward to what we need to accomplish at the present time, not in the past. And so, as he was plowing with this plow with his one hand, he could easily stumble. He could easily lose control over what he was doing. So don't allow anything to distract us in this preparation time. Keep our eyes on what's going to be the results at the end of the year. Back in the book of Exodus 34, God also says in Exodus 34 about this plowing time and harvest time. But he says in Exodus 34:21, "And 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest. In earing time and in harvest you shall, thou shalt rest." In other words, you don't get so preoccupied in doing what needs to be done that we forget to obey God's laws, his Sabbath. The Sabbath was to be kept. No matter how ominous the clouds looked, you keep the Sabbath during harvest season. No matter how wet it looks like the soil's going to get, you keep the Sabbath and the God's laws. No matter how bad the inclination would be humanly, well, but we only got maybe one day to get this done. And the tendency would be to fudge on God's laws, right? I mean, God would understand. Hey, I grew up on a farm. I know all about that. I know how easy it is. I know what it's like when in the hot summer and all of your neighbors are out changing their irrigation pipes because their crops are beginning to wilt. And here we were keeping the Sabbath. And we didn't go out and move our pipe. We didn't change the irrigation pipe. We didn't have the irrigation going on the Sabbath. And the neighbors would all say, well, your crops are going to be ruined. I mean, you don't have any time to waste. You better do it now, right? Well, spiritually speaking, it's easy for us to do that. We have to put the laws of God first, even in the plowing time and in the earing time and in the reaping season, because God is first, and then he will make sure that it'll work out. He can make up for the time that we maybe weren't able to do it because of the Sabbath. Back in Proverbs 20, regarding plowing time also, they knew human nature pretty well, these guys, when they were writing the Bible. In Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 4, it says, "The sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold. Therefore shall he beg in the harvest and have nothing." Let's face it, in Israel, when you came back from the Feast of Tabernacles and you were to begin your plowing, it could be very, very cold. It wasn't comfortable. It wasn't kind of the best of weather to be going out. Your hands might be freezing out there. But God says through the Proverbs that if you don't plow by reason of the cold, you're not going to harvest in the fall. You have to do what needs to be done. We can't waste. What I'm really saying is, don't waste time now. do what necessary now. Let's don't be sluggish about preparation for this coming year. Let's not wait until, oh, we got a perfect day, right? Oh, it's so beautiful out. We could all now go out and do the work. I think there's another proverb that says something like, you know, if you're waiting for the perfect time, you will never do it. All right? You will never get around to it. You will never have the perfect time. In fact, over in Proverbs 26, it kind of leads to that. In Proverbs 26, in verse 13, he says, the slothful man says, there is a lion in the way. There is a lion in the streets. I mean, it's dangerous out there. It's hard. It's bad. You be careful. Therefore, I'm going to stay inside. Spiritually, if we are that way, we're not going to do what's necessary to prepare it. So how do we prepare the soil? Well, how do we, when we put our hands to the plow, we are turning the soil, we are evening it out, leveling the ground, trying to make it the most tillable and the best for the condition that there can be for planting of the seed. So in our preparation, there are essentials in the preparation for a good, well-tilled soil for planting the seed in. Spiritually, they are, number one, our prayers. If there's any time in the year, which, by the way, there should never be a place time we don't do it, but if there's any one time in the year that praying is probably even more essential than ever before, it is in the preparation for the seed that is going to be planted so that it will bring forth a good harvest. So we must establish this year, right now, right after this Feast of Tabernacles, when God has now begun to loosen the soil, we must begin the preparation of that spiritual soil by making it an absolute covenant with God in that sense, that we are going to maintain a very close relationship with Him in our lives. Nothing is going to distract us. It's not too cold out there, and there's no lion in the street, okay? We need to make sure we go out and we do what God says we ought to be doing in our prayer, to really break the clods of our life. Think about, put some thought into what needs to be done in our life to make it more tillable, to make our life more susceptible to bringing forth a good crop. What do we need to be praying about? What are the things in our life that really are perhaps clods, okay? Hard clods like rock in our life that need dissolving, that need breaking down. And I guarantee you there are clods in all of our lives, some kind. And some of them are pretty hard packed, that will only be softened by the very water of God's Spirit. And we only have access to God's Spirit as we maintain that personal, close relationship with God in our prayer and in our relationship, in our communications with Him. Number two is study. What are the areas that we really need to be studying to prove what needs to be done, what needs to be changed in our lives, to study certain areas, perhaps. In fact, every year we need to think about what are the crops that we want to bring forth with God's power this year. What kind of seed? We'll get to this in a little while. But what kind of a crop are we going to be sowing? What are we going to specialize in, certain things, or are we just kind of hit and miss in our study? Are we going to use our study habits to really open up areas that we might need to study more diligently? If there's ever a time for fasting, it is right now, right after the Feast of Tabernacles, in preparation for the coming crop. If there's ever a time for meditation, it is now, to meditate upon what is my life like. What kind of a field am I? What needs to be changed? What needs to be done? And put some thought to it. It's don't allow our spiritual life to become random, but make our lives purposeful and aim at certain situations in our life. They are not just haphazard. I find that far too many of our spiritual lives are hit and miss and haphazard, rather than purposefully aimed at certain things, certain directions, never taking away from the divine inspiration from God, but putting our lives in His hand, but being the diligent worker, not slothful, but getting out of the bed and getting on with life and getting things going so that they can be productive. And then thinking about what needs to be done. Interesting analogy back here in Isaiah 28. And verse 24. Where God says, does the plowman plow all day to sow? I mean, why does the plowman go out and plow the soil? Why does he get out in the cold? Why does he put his hand to the plow? Why is he doing any of this? And God says, and asks the question, does the plowman plow all day to sow? Does he open and break up the clods of his ground? Isn't that what he's supposed to be doing? So when he has made plain the face thereof, does he not then cast abroad the fitches, and he scatters the cumin, and he casts in the principal wheat, and the appointed barley and the rye in their place? For his God doth instruct him to discretion, and does teach him. A very important verse right there, from a spiritual perspective in our life. God says to each one of us as members in the body of Christ that He doth instruct us to discretion and does teach us. Each one of us, He teaches us about what to sow, where to sow, what to do. And then he goes on with the illustration in verse 27. He says, for the fitches are not threshed with a threshing instrument. In other words, the fitches are going to be harvested in a certain way. Neither is a cart wheel turned about upon the cumin. It's harvested in a certain way, which might dictate where you sow each one of them, right? If you're going to be taking a threshing instrument in, you probably might need a better and maybe a more level surface and less rocky area than what you might need if you're going to sow cumin, because you don't turn the wheel upon the cumin. But the fitches are beaten out with a staff and the cumin is with a rod. And the bread corn is bruised because he will not ever be threshing it, nor break it with the wheel of his cart, or bruise it with his horsemen. This also comes forth from the Lord of hosts, which is wonderful in counsel and excellent in working. What I suggest is that if we look at our life as a field that needs to be productive, and we are going to be sowing a number of different kinds of seed to reap a harvest in the fall, that all of that comes forth from the Lord of hosts, and that we need His counsel, we need His help, we need His guidance, which takes you back to why it's important that we pray and study and fast and meditate, so that we have God's counsel of what needs to be sowed. I don't really know. In my own life, I could try to say, well, I have a particular interest in a certain subject. But without God's counsel, that might just be my own personal preference. It might just be my own personal interest. Is that really what God wants me to put into my study for this year? Have I really placed my life in His hand so that I can reap the benefits and recognize that God is the husbandman? He is the one who will give wise counsel. Now, if we look at our life a little bit that way and not just kind of, well, it's just kind of a life, and you know, God will do whatever He wants, and He will do whatever He, so on and so forth. I don't have to put any thought into it. I don't have to do any preparation. I don't have to be diligent in what I'm doing. God says otherwise. We have to be diligent. Don't be slothful. Prepare our lives. Think of your life as a field of that will either be productive or it will not, one or the other. It will bring forth a good crop or else it won't. The second major law of productivity is that we must seed the field. You have to sow seed. Seed is very important. It's very important. It's interesting that in the days of ancient Israel, not so much nowadays with our hybrid corn and our hybrid seeds and all of the HMOs and all the rest of the stuff, but in the days of ancient Israel, the farmer actually saved the best seed of the previous year for the next year. He would take the best of his harvest seed and he would set it aside for the planting in the next year. And he would not allow himself to use it, no matter what straits he was in, no matter how much maybe he had need. The farmer would make sure this set aside the seed was for planting for the next year's crop. And nobody was to go in there and snitch it or take it or use it until the seeding time was to come. And every good farmer would actually make sure he got the best seed of the previous year. He wouldn't just take the worst. He would make sure he tried to select the best he could get. What we need to do is to realize what this coming year should be is building upon a last year. What we harvested with God's help from last year needs to have some effect upon what we are going to do the next year, this coming year, right? So in that way, there is a continuous life of growth from one year to the other, and they are connected in many ways. What we reaped this last fall, we should have set aside the best of our growth and then build upon that. Do you know what you really grew in last year? Do you really know where you made productive growth? Do you know what seed you really did bring forth that you preserved for the planting of this coming year? That, again, takes thought. It takes meditation. It takes the counsel of God. We need to build upon the fruit of our previous year. There are a few laws regarding seed. Number one, use good seed, God says. Back in the book of Leviticus, and Leviticus 19, and verse 19, where God says, "You shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle gender with a diverse kind. You shall not sow your field with mingled seed. And neither shall a garment mingled of linen and wool come upon you." God wants pure seed. He doesn't want mingled seeds. He doesn't want seed that have been mixed with tares or other problems that might be. So we have to ask ourselves, are we sowing good seed, the best of the seed we had from the previous year? It's not mingled seed. An interesting experience that we had back when I was growing up as a kid, that our neighbor planted on his side of the fence, and it was just a fence line, so you really, the crops were pretty close to each other. But our neighbor had planted cantaloupe on his side of the fence. At the same time, we were planting cucumbers on our side of the fence. And so he had cantaloupe. You ever notice how similar a cantaloupe seed looks to a cucumber seed? Very similar. Well, it just so happens that when they came to maturity, that the first couple of rows of his cantaloupes tasted like cucumber. And the first couple of rows of our cucumbers had a cantaloupe taste. Which really pretty well rendered them useless, right? Who wants to eat a cantaloupe with a cucumber taste? Bad enough by themselves. No. No, I like cantaloupe. But, and who wants a cucumber with a cantaloupe taste? God wants purity. And that's why he says, don't sow with mingled seed. It's not his way of mixing things. I kind of look at what man does, and you kind of get the impression that man's way is to mingle things, right? Seems like we get a great pleasure out of mixing what should be kept separate all the time and try to make something different out of it. I'm not saying it's wrong always to hybridize things, but I'm not sure that's God's laws, that we should be taking what he has created and coming up with, within the certain genders and certain things. I'm sure it's probably okay, but we like to go as far out as we can, like, let's just experiment. If we mate a lion and a tiger, what are we going to get, right? Rather than to recognize God made a lion and he made a tiger, that he didn't intend to have an offspring called a, what do they call it now? A what?
A liger.
That's it. But, you know, we have to look at our lives and say, well, are we sowing with pure seed? And recognize, over in Deuteronomy 22 and verse 9, again he says, "You shall not sow your vineyard with diverse seeds, lest the fruit of your seed which you have sown and the fruit of your vineyard be defiled." God says it's a defilement to mix and mingle things. Back in the book of Matthew, we find the parable of the sower in Matthew chapter 13, and I'm not going to turn there and read much of that, but the question when I ask at the end, when the tares began to grow up, and Christ was asked, well, did you not sow your field with good seed? And he said, well, yeah. But he said, then where did all these tares come from? And he said, well, the enemy came in at night and did it, right? The enemy sowed the tares among the good seed. Spiritually, what we might need to realize is that no matter how good a seed we sow, there is Satan, the devil out there, who would love to pervert, pollute, defile whatever we put there. And if he can sow bad seed among the good seed, he certainly will try to do that. But he sowed these tares. The thing about wheat and tares is that they look just alike. And really, you can't even tell the difference until it comes to harvest time. But it just so happens that tares produce black seeds that are very bitter. In fact, they even are poisonous. And so if you mix in those black seeds among the good wheat and the good grain to one degree or the other, the grain is going to be polluted and defiled. It's going to be defiled. The next question we need to ask ourselves, well, how much seed should we sow? And the answer to that is back in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. This is also is a law of harvest, 2 Corinthians chapter 9. And let's pick it up in verse 6. He says, but this I say, he which sows sparingly shall reap also sparingly. My advice to all of us, sow abundantly. Okay. Don't be sparing or stingy on how much we sow or how much seed we use. But we have to sow abundantly. But this I say, he which sows sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he who sows bountifully shall reap also bountifully. But let it be every man according as he purposes in his heart, so let him give. Or we could say, so let him sow. And then down in verse 10 he says, now he that ministers seed to the sower, both minister bread for your food and multiply your seed sown and increase the fruits of your righteousness, being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causes through us thanksgiving to God. So God says, verse 12, for the administration of this service not only supplies the want of the saints, but is abundant also by many thanksgivings unto God. We have to sow abundantly. Don't be afraid. Well, I'll just take a little bit of seed and hopefully it'll produce. It's better to sow extra, abundantly. Extra seed, amount of seed. Which again goes back, we ought to spend extra time in our preparation, in our prayers, study and fasting and meditation, so that we can sow abundantly of the seed. And finally, the third major law is be patient. Be patient. Back in the book of James, in James chapter 5, Book of James, chapter 5. James, the brother of Christ, said in verse 7, be patient, therefore, brethren, until the coming of the Lord, until the harvest, in other words. Because the harvest and the sickles are going to be put into the grain and into the harvest when Christ returns. Be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waits for the precious fruit of the earth, and has long patience for it, until he receives the early and the latter rain. The latter rain comes later on, usually in January, February, maybe March. They are what will bring the seed, bring the fruit to its maturity, the latter rain. So once we have sown the fields, once we have put the seed in there, we have to be like the husbandman. Be patient. But in our patience, let's be diligent. Let's do what we can to take care of, and waiting for the God of the increase to bring forth the productivity. And as it says in Matthew 9, verse 38, that we then pray that the Lord of the harvest send forth laborers into the harvest, that we want to produce a good crop and let God bring forth the increase the way He knows it can be done. The main rains, or the latter rains, actually come in anywhere from mid-December to the end of January. Can even be down into February. But the latter rains are not going to do any good unless we have taken advantage of the former rain or the early rains in preparation of the crop, plowing the field. And so the laws of harvest are that we must put our hands to the plow. Let's till the soil. Let's make it available to receive the seed which will be sown. Secondly, let's sow an abundant amount of seed that we have prepared and used from the last year's crops, and prepare to sow a good amount of seed that will bring forth a good harvest. And finally, let's be patient, trusting God, wait for God, and then we will reap some 30-fold, some 60-fold, and some 100-fold.